everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics Podcast, a show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And I'm very excited to, number one, have a listener question that we're going to answer. But number two, after talking to him in July, I get another chance to talk to Gamal Hennessy, who I've been talking to off air for a while and could keep doing, but I know he's got some Mexican food waiting in the wings, amongst other things. He's also got a book that he talked about last time that wasn't on Kickstarter that is currently on Kickstarter. If you're listening to this the Monday it comes out, go check it out. It's on Kickstarter right now. It's The Business of Independent Comic Book Publishing. He's already smashed his goal a couple times over, and you'll definitely be getting your copy when you sign up there. And it sounds like there's other things in the works potentially down the line. But Gamal, thanks so much for doing this again, and it's exciting to see where the Kickstarter's gone. Maybe talk a little bit about that off the top of what you've done. And you know, this show obviously is talking to people who make comics, and this book is about making comics.
Yeah, well, that's why I always like to come on to the Comics Experience podcast, because I know that I'm talking to people. Well, the book is basically a detailed guide to how to publish your own comics and to create a unique business model for your long-term publishing plan. So what the book does is it walks you through the entire process from the point that you come to the conclusion that you want to make comics for whatever reason, all the way through the pre-production process of finding money, finding a team, finding people to read your book, finding ways to get your book into the market, how to produce your book as a project management kind of situation, and then how to get your book out into the world with various forms of advertising, sales techniques, and then how to actually manage the revenue that comes in. So it is a complete overview of the entire process of independent publishing, not necessarily freelance or creator-driven work. And we released it on Kickstarter because we could not release it at New York Comic Con, because this is the middle of a global pandemic and there is no Comic Con. But the good news is the Kickstarter, I probably done better with the Kickstarter and the attention that it has gotten than I would have if I kind of waded into the endless sea of promotion and merchandise that would have been New York Comic Con.
Right.
We actually, I think at this point we have sold, or the in terms of backers and who's going to get copies of the book, there's about 600 backers that have either bought the digital version, the print version, both versions, or one of the versions, and an hour-long consulting session that I'm offering as the backing. And I don't think it would have been logistically possible for me to sell 300-400 copies of a 450-page book on the show floor while I was actually doing all the other things that I'm normally doing at Comic-Con, because that would have been just I would have had to had a whole entire pallet of books delivered.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't have the logistical structure to manage that. So this is probably, all things considered, a better outcome for the book than my original plan.
Which I'm sure is that could be a whole other chapter. It probably isn't. It's an existing chapter in the book about, hey, something's going to happen.
Yes, it is always the case that, and I wrote, there was a specific chapter in the book about how to deal with changing circumstances, because making comics is a process that involves a certain amount of time. And in that time period, things may happen to you personally, professionally, things may happen to the economy, things may happen in the business of comics, things may happen socially or globally that could impact what you're doing, because comics are not created in a vacuum. So I was originally going to talk about that in the book and how to adjust to that. And ironically, I had to write that chapter in April as the COVID epidemic was in like full swing. So it became COVID became the focus of that chapter to explain how you actually go about dealing with changes, because so many comic creators and publishers had to pivot in so many different ways when comic shops shut down, conventions shut down,
yeah,
Diamond stopped distributing. So many things happened and everybody had to like quickly adjust. So that was what that actual chapter was about.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about the changes since you started and until you finished, I'm sure take aside the COVID issue, there's always changes in the industry. There's always something that will affect what you're doing. But in this case, I mean, what a what a time. The another thing that I don't think we remarked on that I may not have known at the time, that you had Mike Martz as the editor of this book. And Mike Martz, folks might recognize his name from Marvel, and he is currently the editor-in-chief of Aftershock. So not only did you write a book about putting together publishing comics and independent comic book publishing, but you brought in an editor that's worked for a number of different comics publishers to be part of your team.
Yeah, the idea there was I wanted to make sure that whoever was working on the book with me had the kind of practical real world experience in comics that I did not have from a production side, because my background is starting up companies, helping comic creators protect their intellectual property, negotiate their contracts, help them figure out their business plan. But
Sure.
it would be disingenuous for me to pretend that I actually put books out onto the into the market and actually ran those sales, because
Right.
I didn't. That was not where my specialty lay. So
Right.
I brought in Mike because Mike had worked for Marvel. That's where I met him. Then he worked for DC. Then he went back to Marvel, and then he started Aftershock. And in within the short period of time that Aftershock has been around, they've gained a considerable percentage of the market in the independent space, primarily because Mike has that background, and he has access to the talent that can actually raise the profile and make some very, very good books. So I brought him to be the editor of the book. So when I'm writing all of this stuff and making all of these suggestions, he was able to say, yes, that makes sense in the real world, or no, that is a pipe dream. Take that out of the book because it doesn't make any sense. So he was actually able to provide real world perspective on the concepts that the book is talking about.
And just a quick rundown for folks listening, if you haven't looked at the Kickstarter, you can go to Kickstarter and search for The Business of Independent Comic Book Publishing. It's just digital edition. There's a paperback edition, and then there's a paperback and digital. You still have, at least of our recording, you still have a couple of the consulting spots left, which also gets you a copy of the digital edition. All the print consulting spot tiers are gone, which is awesome to see. But it's one of those things that getting into comics, you're worried about so many other factors that you don't necessarily think about. Maybe just even the legal aspect. Maybe you're thinking about the business side, but there's just so much that may not have occurred to you. I'm definitely going to shill for the book and say it's so inexpensive to have this as a resource to be. It's from somebody who started a small business, who knew nothing about running a business, who didn't get an accountant or a lawyer, until a year and a half, 2 years into the business. It's a great thing to at least make you think and talk through or think through what you're doing and how to get from A to B of, I want to do comics. Oh no. How am I going to do comics with collaborators? How am I going to think about a contract if Aftershock wants to talk to me about making a co-? It's so much in that kind of background that you might not occur to you that, for the price, it's pretty great that you can at least get a jump start on your brain thinking about different ways to talk through publishing your comic, charging for your comic. How do I market my comic? Who am I marketing my comic to? What happens if a publisher contacts me because they saw me on Kickstarter and wants to publish my comic? There's just so much there. So I will shill for you so you don't have to
I appreciate
go
you
too
actually
far.
said it very well.
Well, it's true. I mentioned to you off air, I had to buy out a business partner with another business partner, and that's something that never occurs to me as somebody starting off in a creative industry, thinking like, I want to make stuff. You don't necessarily think like, what if personalities don't get along? What if somebody wants to go do something else, or they have to leave because of a family matter? And to have a document that guides you on, hey, you know what? We're going to value the company. And we're going to have a third-party accounting firm come in and tell you how much they think it costs. And then from there, it's up to us to say, hey, this is the schedule we're going to buy you out for. Which is, not to say that the comics necessarily is, it's not apples to oranges, but some things do happen. And what sparked this is we actually had a listener question from a couple months ago. So I hope you're still listening, and I hope it's still applicable to what you're thinking about. But the question, we're just going to kind of address the first part and then, there's a little bit more information that we're not going to get into, just related to some background. But the question is, I have a question for the podcast. How do I gauge an appropriate kill fee to buy out another creator? And that question comes to us from listener Bennett Simon. Thanks so much, Bennett, for your question. And that's a pretty specific question with, again, something that might not be a consideration going into a creative endeavor where, hey, we want to get published by Image. Hey, we want to get published by Boom. Hey, we want to go take this to Aftershock. And this is my first time making comics. And I had to find a writer because I'm the artist and I got a colorist. And now I got all these people. And oh, no, I've made a small business all of a sudden that could potentially lead to something like The Walking Dead. You know, there's so many, you know, factors of things you may or may not have thought about getting into it. And kill fees is certainly one that I don't know that I've thought about. So you seem like a good person to talk through, you know, explaining what this is. And then I don't know if you've dealt with different scenarios or anything else that comes to mind on how to address this.
Mm-hmm. Well, before you actually talk about, like, the question is, what is an appropriate kill fee? So before you get into that discussion, you have to have clarity on what a kill fee is. And technically in publishing, and this is applicable to both prose publishing, magazine publishing, and comic book publishing, a kill fee is the amount of money that one party, usually the publisher or the owner of the intellectual property, pays to talent if they contract for work to be done and then decide before everything is completed or before the contract is actually fulfilled, that they're going to kill the project. So that's why it's called a kill fee. So let's say a writer hires an artist to do some character designs and do the interior pages for a comic. The character designs go well, and then the artist starts to do the thumbnails for the comic, and it is completely off. I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. And the writer quickly comes to the conclusion that they cannot use this artist. They cannot go forward with the project. It could be that no amount of editing or revisions or anything else is going to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. So what you do in that case is you set up a kill fee because the artist has done work. It's not as if the artist did not fulfill their terms of the contract. It's just what they produced is not useful to the person who's ultimately going to own it. So to compensate the artist for their time and effort, and to make sure that the person who owns the rights doesn't have to like keep putting money into a thing that's not going to go anywhere because it's not what they want, mm-hmm. A kill fee is a solution to that dilemma. Now, in most circumstances, when I'm working with my clients, kill fees do not come up primarily because I suggest a very specific type of compensation model that you can use if you don't use the model that I'm going to suggest, you can still use the concept to determine what the appropriate kill fee is. And what I use as a compensation method, I like to refer to as a tennis method. And the way it works is one side is actually paying money for the other side to produce something, whether it's a script or pages or coloring or whatever it is. There's something that they're going to be producing on an incremental basis. So the way the tennis method works is the owner, though, let's say the publisher, pays a certain portion of the overall compensation to the artist. The artist, then it's their job to produce a certain portion of the actual work that they've been contracted to produce. So let's say an artist is hired to do, let's say, 10 pages, just to keep it simple.
Sure.
The publisher pays for the first two pages. The artist produces the first two pages and sends them to the publisher. Now, the publisher doesn't want two pages. The publisher wants 10 pages. Mm-hmm. So it's an incentive for them to pay the second round so that the artist will then do the next two pages. And the reason I call it the tennis method is because the actual payment and pages go back and forth until the artist has produced all the pages and the publisher has paid all of the fee. Does that make sense so far?
Yes, totally.
Okay, so now how this actually can function as an implied kill fee is that if, let's say, the publisher pays for the first two pages, the artist pays delivers the first two pages, and it is completely wrong. It is completely off, and the publisher doesn't want to move forward. At that point, they can terminate the contract, as long as the termination clause is in the contract, because the artist hasn't done, the artist has been paid for all the work they did. The publisher has paid for all of that work. So both sides can walk away knowing that they have been compensated, or they have actually not lost anything. The artist did not produce all the work and then only get paid for like 20% of it. And the publisher didn't pay, you know, for 100% of stuff that they're not going to use at all. This method actually is not, it's not universal. A lot of, not everyone uses this method that I just described, but it is, can be helpful to protect both sides from either overproducing and worried about getting paid, or overpaying and worrying about the production coming in. Mm-hmm. I originally started to utilize this because a lot of people in comics use international talent. And it is very difficult, even if you get someone to sign a contract, if they're in the Philippines and you're in Texas and you don't have a lot of money, if they walk away with all your cash,
right,
it's very difficult for you to somehow get an attorney in Manila to find this artist and then sue them for the amount of money that they owe you. In fact, it's probably so much, so expensive to do that, you are better off just losing the money and walking away.
Right.
But this method that I created actually incentivizes the artist to keep producing, and it incentivizes the publisher to keep paying, so that both sides are, can stay in the flow of the contract with, without either side kind of worrying about getting ripped off. And it works, and it also works equally well as a kill feed. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I think, you know, from a practical standpoint, the first comic pages that I paid for art, I worked with somebody that was out of the country, and this was like 2011, 2010, so I frankly don't recall where I got that, but I'm sure it was something related to Comics Experience, which might have been directly related to you or Andy Schmidt talking about, you know, doing a percentage, and that's that's how I was used to getting paid and am used to getting paid from working with clients, is sometimes it's like, you know, 50-50 or 25-25-50. Percent, you know, get something up front and then get the upon project completion, you know, the final amount. And that's how I approach the pages. And I love the art, the artist. It was one of those moments where it's like, this is great. This is, you know, totally in the zone of what I wanted. And he seemed very excited at the outset and then just kind of fell off the planet after delivering a page. And it was in that moment of, well, I guess I'm, you know, because I had paid him X amount. I think I'd paid for maybe 50% of it. And I just, the last email before I got the additional pages was, hey, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if you're busy or, you know, you can't finish the project, but at this point, you know, I had this timeline and the schedule that you agreed to, and you're obviously not going to do it. And I'd like to keep working with you, but the contact is, you know, you're not keeping up with contact and I'm not getting the pages. So let's just call it done, you know, keep the money and that's it. And his response was like, no, I'm getting you the pages. And then he got me the pages. And it was one of those, like, I certainly didn't want to eat the cost. And, you know, it was a couple $100s. It wasn't thousands. Mm-hmm. But still, you don't want to be out a couple $100 when your budget is a couple $100 for art.
And exactly.
It definitely saved me. Because I don't know that there was anything sinister. I don't know if it was anything other than, hey, this guy is in a different country and he got busy, and or maybe he had family stuff, or, you know, fill in the blank. Any particular reason that could have been just life came up and he wasn't good at communicating and it wasn't a priority. And I totally get it. And at that point, no harm, no foul, we're done. And it just, that's what it took to get to that next step. So for me, as somebody looking to work with other creators, you know, what you're describing sounds like a really good way to do it. And I know that you know, is something that going into looking at costs and figuring out a budget, just the artwork and the coloring and lettering alone is something. But if you're looking at an artistic collaborator, if you're a writer or an artist, it's got to be, it seems like that is one of those conversations to have of the, well, what if I need to buy you out or do something else, have that kill fee quote in there. Is there any, go ahead.
Keep in mind that a buyout for a collaborator who owns a piece of the underlying intellectual property is significantly different than a payment schedule that has an implied kill fee, because one situation you're talking about freelance work for hire talent, and all you have to do there is make sure that they are compensated for their time and you actually get what it is that you contracted for. Right. A collaboration agreement is different because you basically are agreeing to own the underlying intellectual property. So at a certain point, you have to make decisions on if one, that's going to be part of what's called the withdrawal clause. So if one party has to leave because life gets in the way, or, you know, they suddenly get like a Netflix deal and they can't work on this comic thing anymore because they've got other things to do, that's fine. But you have to decide, well, if there's work that needs to be done, who actually gets to complete the work? Or does the entire project die if one person leaves? Or do the rest of the people have an implied right to continue? And if so, what are the terms? Who's going to own the copyright after one of the parties leaves? Who's going, what in terms of, if there's an ongoing revenue stream, like let's say the book is an ongoing series and somebody has to leave after 4 issues.
Right.
Well, do they continue to get paid for all the issues that come out, or does their payment stop at the 4th issue because they didn't work on anything else? You have to kind of figure all those things out. And then let's say that's an ongoing series and then it gets spun out into, let's say, I don't know, Activision buys it to become a video game. Well, does the person who left, do they get anything from the video game,
mm-hmm.
or do they get based on what they actually produced, or do they get based on whatever other idea that you want to like factor in there? It's all of that has to be laid out in a collaboration agreement in ways that are different from a work for hire agreement, where it's just you're trying to protect the cash that's going out the door.
Right. A lot of food for thought. Well, I don't want to stray too far away from kill fees, but thanks for going in a little bit deeper on that too. Any other, I guess, general advice related to kill fees that you would tell folks as far as starting to get into it? It seems like, you know, from a communication standpoint, you might meet somebody in person. Back in the before times, you may have met someone in person at a convention and gotten to know them a little bit and then say, hey, maybe we should collaborate, and then talk to them. Most of the time, I feel like with any kind of outreach through social media or through, you know, email as an inquiry of, hey, I'm looking to start producing this comic. Would you be interested in talking to me about a collaboration? It seems like that's something that is maybe a little bit further down the conversation with somebody, but something to think about, and then have a way to kind of broach that to say, hey, let's talk about kill fees, or let's talk about, you know, other aspects of what happens if you leave the book at issue 4, and how does that mm-hmm. break down?
Yeah, usually what happens when people are talking about collaboration agreements and talking about just putting together the terms of that, what I suggest to my clients all the time is that the terms of the withdrawal are actually discussed before the contract is done. Mm. So as long as you remember that, the withdrawal kind of terms are different from the kill fee, because a kill fee, again, is just, you know, in terms of how much cash is the artist getting for the work that they already put in. But you can actually, both the kill fee and the withdrawal clause can be negotiated before you actually start talking about the rest, or while you're talking about the rest of the terms of the contract, because everyone is interested in how much they're going to get paid. But you have to kind of, in that conversation, while they're still excited about getting paid, you have to talk to them about, well, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to give you X percentage. And the percentage, and this is, goes back to the original question that the community member asked about, mm-hmm. the percentage, you could actually determine that based on a discussion of, well, how much was actually produced. Because comics is a sequential industrial kind of process, where certain steps have to happen before other steps happen, you can tie the kill fee to where you are in the process. So is it, and I keep using artists as the example because it's the easiest one to use.
Sure.
Did the artist do just the character design? Well, then you divide the kill fee up into certain steps. And if they only did the first step, then the kill fee is the whatever that percentage is of the first step. Mm-hmm. Did they do the character designs and the rough pencils? Well, then you pay them two parts of that whatever that division is. If they did everything up to, like, let's say one person's handling all the creative on it. If they did everything up to the lettering and then the whole thing, that's when you need to do the kill fee, then they should probably get 70 or 80% of what it is that they did, because realistically, they did the work. It's just that it's not going to be done to completion, and you account for that. That way you don't have to pick an arbitrary number that may be too low, may be too high. You pick a number based on the percentage of work that they did, whether that's 20%, 60%, 80%.
Great. Yeah, that makes sense. It all makes sense. Well, thanks again for jumping on. And again, if you are listening to this on September 8th, September 9th, and there will be other opportunities in the future to get Gamal's book, The Business of Independent Comic Book Publishing, check it out on Kickstarter. There's still the consulting time left, which is, again, I think super valuable just to have those conversations if you're, you know, looking to get into comics in any form or fashion. And, you know, that we've talked about a variety of things that can happen related to comics. And I mentioned, you know, also off air, we were talking about some other folks that we know that have had opportunities come along just from being on Kickstarter that they didn't plan on. There's a couple of Comics Experience community members over the years I know have had that gotten contacted by other publishers and had different conversations based on just seeing them on Kickstarter, which is not necessarily a thing you think about getting into. Is, oh, somebody wants to talk to me about other projects or publishing this project. And there's a lot of stuff can happen. So having some basis, have a foundation for, you know, where to go and how to think about your creative career is always a good thing. You can find Gamal on Twitter as well. And if you go to, let's see, it's Gamal Hennessy, G-A-M-A-L. Mm-hmm. Hennessy, and you can see a number of folks that have talked about the book in addition to some other things. And I think you can see your retweet from Scott Snyder, who's also got a comic on Kickstarter currently. And the review that I like, or rather the interview I like, is from Freak Sugar, where they talk about how the necessity of getting this book.
Mm-hmm. It is one of the things that I've a lot, because I've done, I had talked to quite a few people, podcasts and, you know, in the comic book press, and the refrain is pretty much the same, is that if there is no other book, and I think that's one of the reasons why the Kickstarter did so well, it's not as if I'm competing with a lot of other books that are explaining the business of comics to artists and publishers. It's kind of the only one. So people should actually, if for nothing else, I mean, you got to get it because you don't really have other options. You
know, so. Well, it's great to check out. And you're also online at creativecontractconsulting.com. That's where folks can find your business site and get more information about you, or if they want to contact you in a different capacity. So I think it's any other places we should direct folks to?
Yes, there is a Facebook group called The Business of Independent Comic Book Publishing that you can join, and a lot of creators and artists have joined that to kind of share their work, find people to collaborate with, talk about different aspects of the business. So it's a very good forum for people who want to be engaged in that community.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time again. And if you have a question that you want to hear talked about on the show, you can email info@comicsexperience.com. You can tweet @comicexperience. We'll talk about it on the show. Go follow Gamal and see the progress of the book. And it sounds like you have a couple more announcements coming out down the line related to the book and some other stuff, which is also very exciting.
Yep. Probably next week.
Excellent. So it'll almost be real time. All right. Well, everybody, until next time, keep making comics.